You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's the Score North Twin Show.
Oh. Is it still hot? Still, you know, I would say this. As long as Blake Snell,
Cody Bellinger,
and Jordan Montgomery. See, Bellinger's probably not a Twins option, even on like a one-year Boris thing, because they're going to... He's a center fielder, right?
Right.
I guess you could put him somewhere else, but...
Nah,
but as long as Blake Snell is still on the board, we can keep firing the hot stove sounder. Yeah.
I don't think... To that point as well, I think that season that Bellinger had with the Dodgers, if I'm him, I am not doing a one-year contract just in case.
I think it was like 2 years, wasn't it?
Well,
he was just
broken. But whatever it was prolonged enough where if I'm him, and I don't know, I think he did throw his shoulder out during the World Series, the pandemic series, on a high five that impacted him greatly.
Something I would do.
Dude, he
did a high five. And it
unplayably bad
his shoulder
for like 2 years.
And I think that started it.
Isn't that also, like, if you're a team right now, you're probably looking at that. You see what he did with the Cubs last year. You see the rookie of the year, the MVP season, then the reclamation season last year. But you're in the back of your head, you're like, what if he short circuits again for two years?
Well, he's got the, he has a personality that screams ability to short circuit.
Yeah. He led the league in one category last year. Can you guess what it was?
Strikeouts?
No, not strikeouts. He only struck out 87 times.
Oh, I didn't know he was that disc.
500 feet does not strike out.
Good for him.
He led the league in...
doubles?
Doubles, yeah.
Joey Gallo would never.
Oh, sacrifice flies.
Sack flies.
12. Sack so flies. Joey Gallo has 3 sacrifice flies in his career.
Yeah.
Cody Bellinger had 12 last year to lead the major leagues.
So a guy that hits home runs, like the one thing besides striking out, hits home runs, cannot get a ball in the air with a guy on third base.
That is correct.
Isn't that weird?
It really is. Like, so he strikes out a ton, but you're like, okay, dude, if you hit home runs, like, wouldn't you accidentally, during the course of your career, hit fly balls to the warning track with a guy on third?
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Is that the craziest stat you've ever heard in your life watching baseball?
Baseball's great. Baseball's
3
so great.
3 sacrifice flies for a power-hitting fly ball guy in 3,000 plate appearances.
Baseball's got so many, like, weird little things like that, though, that don't make any sense.
Yeah. It's crazy. So we're going to do two things on today's Score North Twin Show. If you guys could please help us continue to grow this thing. It's been great being back after a 2-year hiatus for that stretch run last year. Give us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple and Spotify, and click the like button and the subscribe button on the Score North YouTube channel. as we look to go full steam ahead into the 2024 season. We have a couple other fun things we will announce show related here in the coming weeks that we are super pumped about. But today, Judd has a 26-man roster, so we're going to do this before the first game on Friday against the Gophers. Then we'll do it another time or two, and then we'll get back to doing Twins-related immaculate grids on today's show as well. So, Judd, take it away, man.
All right, pal.
All right.
Here we go.
26-man roster as of now, subject to change, of course. We have not, as Phil just said, even started spring training games. Going by position, I will start behind the dish. Ryan Jeffers and Christian Vasquez will be your catchers.
Mm-hmm. So now Vasquez has talked pretty openly about just how disappointed he is in last year. He came in $10 million a year, right? They brought him in to be the starting catcher, basically.
Yeah. Yes.
And then it was Ryan Jeffers that overhauled his entire swing in the offseason, became one of the best offensive catchers in the league, and Christian Vasquez did not produce offensively. So they've got two starting catchers if you look at Vasquez's track record, but
yeah, but catching's so weird, because it's so two-pronged. Like, if Jeffers takes a step back offensively, don't be shocked. And Vasquez is probably still considered a better defensive catcher, and someone's going to get hurt for sure. Like, there's so many variables that go into this. It's like when we all thought, oh, Mitch Garver is going to be the Johnny Bench here now, right? And I was like, nah, he's really not. So to me, catching is the one thing where the position itself demands so much that I think it takes years to consider a guy like a finished product, right?
Yeah, and you need two guys because, like you said, injuries at that position. And, absolutely. You know, Jeffers is also 6'4", 235 pounds. It's just like that's a big-sized guy to be back there healthy on a regular basis. So, so I'm feeling good about that position group.
He also lost some weight, too, in the offseason. Vasquez did. So he lost some weight, tried to improve his swing a little bit. You need him to be somewhat playable. Because, yeah, it's a pretty hard ask to ask any catcher to catch more than, like, 110 games at this point. So it's still probably going to be, like, a 60-40, maybe even, like, a 55-45 split between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so we move on to first base. I have two first basemen on the opening day roster. Alex Kirilloff and Carlos Santana. And Santana does actually give you he gives you a ton of credibility at first base as well, because he's good there. Kirilloff needs improvement. I think that's being kind. Like, he can play the position, but the presence of Santana actually at first should probably help out as far as tricks of the trade. So Kirilloff and Santana to play first base. And just full disclosure here, I don't have a DH because I think there's a lot of candidates. So, like, positional, to me,
it's a rotating door.
Nelson Cruz. And Carlos Santana is good enough at first base that I don't think it's fair to pigeonhole him as the DH.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he definitely will, but he won't DH, I don't think, on a daily basis because he's also good in the field. Go ahead.
Let's explore the space here.
Yeah, I agree completely. I was just going to keep going. I was being a little bit rude there. I like to apologize.
One thing I want to say on behalf of Kirilloff is I think people have too quickly forgotten how great he was as a prospect not that long ago. So in his last full season of AAA, or not full, but like his last chunk of AAA, he hit .366 with a .458 on base percentage and an OPS over 1,100. And if you go back and look at, like, Baseball America prospect rankings, MLB.com pipeline, he was in the futures game in 2018. He was the 9th ranked prospect in all of baseball in 2019. On Baseball America, he was, even 2 years ago, he was 18th in 2021. So I feel like people kind of look at Kirilloff and he's had the chronic wrist issues and then the shoulder, and like, he hasn't really produced at the plate. But man, if that dude, there's a lot of prospects that for whatever reason, it just takes them a few years of stop starts and then it clicks for them. If it clicks for that dude, we're literally talking about the best hitter in your lineup just overnight. He's healthy and it clicks. So I'm not saying it's likely that happens, but there is a chance, a I would say a well above 0% chance that it clicks for Alex Kirilloff at age 26 if he's healthy to start the year.
If Buxton was not such a talking point because of the exact same thing, we'd be talking about Kirilloff way more.
Yeah.
Because that swing is so sweet. That's a great swing. Like he is, he has been, and I think the question is the issue that they cleaned up a couple of years ago now in his arm, right?
The wrist.
Or wrist. Is that fixed? Can that be fixed? Because if he gets, if his career derails completely, that's probably why. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this guy is a, this guy deserves a definite chance.
Yes.
A definite chance. Dex, thoughts?
I would say it, but it has to happen now. There's no more, oh, waiting, stopping and starting. It's got to happen now for him. He's got 700 at-bats in the major leagues. He's destroyed minor league pitching. There's nothing left to accomplish there. It's got to happen now. So like in 2024, it's go time with him. He has to figure out how to hit lefties a little bit better too. Yes, I think there is a good player in there, but it's pretty much, I wouldn't call it a make or break season for him in his career, but it has to happen in 2024 for us to really see if this guy is up to his potential.
And by the way, even with like the some of the stops and starts last year, and he still had an OPS plus of 117, so a well above average OPS for him last year. Let's build off this, Alex. Let's see what we can do. Okay, second base.
Edward Julian and Kyle Farmer, who also obviously fits a utility role.
Yes.
But Julian and Farmer, and I think Farmer will see plenty of opportunity, probably, unless Julian turns out to be really good at second base, probably as a late inning replacement for Julian. But Julian and Farmer, Stella, keep it down. If Farmer is not moved,
I
got this. Okay,
can't lefties.
Don't you tell me about your Twins roster. Hey. You could do that later. Farmer is, I think Farmer is a candidate potentially to be moved in spring training. So I've got him, in fact, highlighted right here because of that.
Oh, you highlighted the ones that could be moved?
Yeah, because I think there's some possibilities here. I think there's definitely, let me say this. If Brooks Lee has a great spring training,
oh, yeah.
I think we got to talk again.
Where do you put, see, you want him to play all the time, though. So you,
I know.
This is a great problem to have.
I know.
If that dude lights it up in spring training, don't you probably still start him in AAA and wait for an injury or something?
You start.
I do, but from my chair here, I still put an internal pressure on the Twins to get this done and get him in there at some place because it's more.
And he's been working out at second, at third, right? He's working out at some different spots.
Yep. And again, guys get hurt. Like we always say this. There's no opportunity. He's blocked, and then a guy twists an ankle or something or gets hit by a pitch. So Julian Farmer at second base.
Okay. I love it. Yeah. Julian got to start hitting lefties. It's a train wreck against lefties, but give him a chance. I don't think he can just be a platoon hitter, but until he can hit lefties, it does give you some flexibility to maneuver your lineup around and bring a right-handed hitter in. So, okay.
All right. So that's second base. Shortstop. No surprise. Just one guy. Carlos Correa. Third base, one guy, hopefully, knock on wood, he stays healthy, Royce Lewis.
I saw some sneaky, I think it was Bovada that sent an email of like player odds to lead different categories, and he showed up like 25th in the lead the league in home runs category.
Really?
He has the best odds of any Twins player to also win AL MVP, even better than Correa.
See that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, he is clutch, I will say that. Mm-hmm. Outfield, Wallner, Buxton, and Kepler. Kepler, that's right.
Highlighted. Oh.
Highlighted. Just watch out. Just be on. Just
keep an eye on.
It's a Kepler watch. It's not a warning. Okay. There's not an imminent trade danger, but it's a definite watch.
Okay.
So those are the three outfielders. And then the utility guys that I've got right now, obviously, Willie Castro, who's going to play some center field when Buxton is resting. And for right now, and this is the subject to change thing, Austin Martin.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to have to prove it. Like, I think we're assuming, well, he's going to play some center and he's going to make the team. Well, if he has a bad spring training, he's probably not. But Castro and Martin are the two guys that I've got as utility players, and then again, DH to me is going to be a collection of the guys I just went through.
So you would you could bring in a Duvall or a Pham still in free agency 100%. If you wanted to, right-handed 100%. Bats.
So 13 position players?
Yep, 13 and 13.
Okay.
And then out for now, Brooks Lee, Trevor Larnach, Jose Miranda, who I think had a good chance to make the team until Santana was signed.
Yep. Yep. And we'll see. If Santana winds up being cooked at age 38, you could easily move off that. It's $5 million, right?
Exactly.
But I don't think he is cooked.
This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation. Okay, now we need 13 pitchers.
So 13 position players, 13 pitchers, starting rotation. Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, Chris Paddock, Anthony DeScalfani.
Ooh, close.
DeScalfani?
Ooh, close. DeSclafani, right?
DeSclafani.
DeSclafani.
DeSclafani. You know what? It ain't going to work here long because I've got Varlin. Varlin challenging him in training.
If Varlin doesn't win the fifth starter spot,
he should be in
the bullpen. Think he starts in St. Paul?
Then? I went through the bullpen this morning, and I'm going to tell you right now, I think because the starting spots four with Paddock is dangerous because of he's coming off his second Tommy John.
So you'd need Varlin to be ramped up.
Five might be a bust there. And so I think if Varlin comes through with a big spring, I think we could be looking at a surprise move there as far as the expectation. I think he could make the team as a starter if he has a big spring.
Yeah, I would.
Otherwise, I think he's in St. Paul, Dex.
I would say odds are in favor that he starts in St. Paul. If you had a money line, I would love if DraftKings gave us a money line on Louis Varlin right now. But I would bet that money line favorite is he doesn't make the roster and he starts in St. Paul due to the logjam in the bullpen and DeSclafani being on the roster too.
And it wouldn't be because he's not potentially better than a couple of your bullpen options. It would be because if one of your starters goes down, you need someone stretched out and ready to come in and throw five or six innings. And if he's pitching out of the bullpen, you couldn't then flip the switch the other way, right?
Yes, and we know guys get hurt, right? Yeah. Guys get hurt. Paddock will get hurt or potentially just have to rest. Like, I cannot see Paddock not taking a two-week break at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So those are the five. Yeah. The number five spot, really weak. And the innings potential limit on Paddock, even Ober, it's like, dude, he faded last year hardcore.
You could make a case that no matter where Varlin starts the season, he's going to play an enormous role.
Agreed. Okay. We need eight relievers.
Yep. And this is where, to steal a term from Kwesi, as I went through this, the Twins building of this bullpen was very intentional.
Mm-hmm. They've done a good job.
They were intentional with their actions. This is not a hodgepodge of, man, I got this guy off of Rule 5 from the Pirates, and I got this guy. This is a very intentional construction, and I think it's my favorite bullpen that Falvey has built as far as start of the season.
Yeah.
I really like what they did. All right. Duran, obviously, your closer. Brock Stewart has the team made. Griffin Jacks, Caleb Thielbar. So those are four returners that you could, I think, put in pen, unless they either completely crap the bed, get hurt. But I think that those guys can be written in pen. It's the last four that I think is very interesting. Okay. So Pagan's gone, and Pagan, terrible 2 years ago, far superior last year. And he's the type of guy that I think that this regime at times really didn't properly replace, or they tried to replace and they took a flyer. I like what they did here. The last four, Justin Topa, who they got from Seattle in the Polanco trade.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Stamont, is that correct?
Stamont.
Stamont, who they got from Kansas City. Jay Jackson, who they signed from Toronto. Now, Jay Jackson, to me, is very much in pencil.
Mm-hmm.
If he does not have a good spring, the job's in jeopardy there, and he's going to have to compete. But he's coming off a pretty good year, and I think that he's going to get at least a long look. And then Stephen Okert, who they got, who is a left-hander. So one, I think he's got a huge advantage because he's only the second southpaw, who they got in the Nick Gordon trade with Miami. And then my first guy out, but he could challenge Jay Jackson, Jorge Alcala.
Yep. He's been an intriguing arm, injury problems. Yep. Josh Winder's another one. I mean, they love,
but he's injured, right?
Five. What's his?
I think he had a December procedure done,
yeah,
and he's shut down. So he's going to be, he could be a summer type of guy, but he's still out.
Yep. And then the other, I mean, Cody Funderburk is the other lefty, yep, that came up at the That's end of the one. Year last year, dominated for chunks in the minor leagues, but.
And he'll have a chance.
I don't think I disagree with any of this. The only thing, I guess, looking at the whole 26 here, really nice bullpen. A lot of really nice, especially your infield. Your infield has just really good pieces overflowing. Outfield is very Byron Buxton dependent in terms of a right-handed bat, a center fielder that
too
can.
Much.
It's very Buxton dependent. Yeah,
I'm nervous about the outfield.
And then once you get down to like the 12th and 13th position players, especially 13 with Austin Martin, you're kind of crossing your fingers there.
Yep.
And then the rotation, you're really crossing your fingers on how many innings a couple of those guys can eat and how effectively, but
yep.
But they're set up very nicely.
So if they don't bring Michael A. Taylor back, here's my question. And in, we know from a report, I think it was in The Athletic last summer, that Max Kepler said, I want to play right field. I don't want to move to center. Mm-hmm. Here's my question though. Have they gone back and talked to him about that? I don't love Kepler in center, but I think I'm a little bit more at ease with the current construction of things. If Kepler agrees to play, and I'm not saying full time, but I'm saying at times, mm-hmm, like if Buxton goes down for a week or something, will Kepler go to center? Because then if I sign a corner guy, I can just park him in right or left.
Like
it gives you more options is my point.
And you have enough left-handed hitters. It kind of depends too on like if Larnick is up at some point, but you could strategically sit Buxton against some of the best right-handed pitchers, put Kepler in center field, and then have three lefties in your outfield. What I don't get is like, why is it up to Kepler?
Well,
if they like him in center field as a fill-in and a spot starter,
who knows?
Who cares if he likes it or not? Dude, we need you in center field.
Well, and at his current situation, I would think that just for his career, it would be smart to go along with plans.
Agreed.
More than not, right?
Yes.
Because it's like, if you're like, I am a corner outfielder. Well, those aren't hard to find. But if you say, I'm a corner outfielder who can play center.
Yeah.
Now I think you're creating a career arc that actually helps you out a lot.
Yeah. Bravo, Judd. Nice work there.
Thank you.
On your 26-man roster.
You like that?
Yeah, I think the bullpen is its biggest strength. They signed Stamat to a deal, so I expect him to most likely make the roster unless this, you know, he had the thoracic outlet surgery where, you know, they remove a rib to make you throw a baseball, which has always worked out really well for past guys. I think he's someone that's probably in pencil. I like Jay Jackson, even though he didn't make the Blue Jays playoff roster last year, was actually really effective for them. He's kind of just a two-pitch pitcher, but he had some really good numbers. And he even was saying that when he didn't make the Blue Jays roster, but he was obviously still with the team when the Toronto came here for the wild card series. And he said he loved the energy at Target Field. He thought it was incredible to see. Yeah, I think their bullpen is by far their biggest strength here. It's going to be awesome to watch that bullpen shut things down.
Yeah, I would say bullpen and infield. Mm-hmm. Bullpen and infield are what you're leaning on here for this team. And then in the top of the rotation, I don't think enough people are talking about Joe Ryan. Joe Ryan was regarded 2 years ago as your best starting pitcher. And then they brought in Pablo Lopez and there was still some discussion. If you take away like the 6 or 7 weeks that he pitched hurt and didn't tell anyone and gave up 53 home runs in like a week, Joe Ryan is definitely better than people are maybe talking about if he's healthy. So, All right, let's do a little Immaculate Grid action here, boys. We haven't done this in a few weeks. We've kind of fallen off the Immaculate Grid trail. What we're going to do is we're going to earmark, if the Twins are on the grid, we're going to save it so we can at least do one Immaculate Grid per week on the show here. So we have not done this one. This is from, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago.
Sunday's Immaculate Grid. Today is Tuesday. So February 18th.
Okay. So for the YouTube audience, you can see this on your screen. For the audio audience, we're looking to fill 9 different squares, and we're looking for as obscure players as possible to get as low of a score as possible. We're looking for a Twin who was a Philly, a Twin who struck out 2,000 hitters in their career. Could be, it doesn't have to be all with the Twins, but a 2,000 strikeout pitcher that played for the Twins at some point. And then a Twin that had 200 strikeouts in a season with the Twins. White Sox who was a Philly, White Sox 2,000 Ks, White Sox 200 K season. And then Angel who was a Philly, Angel with 2,000 strikeouts in their career, and then an Angel with a 200 strikeout season. Okay. Let's start with the Twins. Jeb, which square do you want to start with here?
Well, let's start Twins and Phillies.
Okay.
How about that one?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some great options.
There's an old school one. Larry Heisel played for both.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you got your Nick Puntos.
Carlos Silva, Dave Hollins.
Yes.
Right?
Do Philly fans remember Vance Worley? The Vanimal.
Vance Worley, dude. The Vanimal. Opening day starter for the Twins in like 2013.
Oh, mm-hmm. God, those were the years. How about the Vanimal being on the same starting staff with Knucklehead Nolasco?
Knucklehead Nolasco.
I like one. Cars. Oh, that's good.
Boy, these are like pretty good. Did Trevor May was in the Phillies system, but he didn't play for the Phillies, right? Because he came over in that trade.
Yeah, relievers would be good. Neshek, right?
Neshek.
Did J.C. Romero pitch with the Phillies? I think they got him from the Phillies. Okay.
He did.
Okay, J.C. Romero.
Didn't Jake Cave have the last out of the playoffs?
He might still be on their 40-man for all I know.
Neshek is a great Immaculate Grid guy. I'm just writing some names down here. I would say between the Vanimal, Larry Heisel, and Pat Neshek, which one of those is the most rare?
Neshek's a reliever. Do people remember him that well?
Terry Mulholland as well. He was an early 90s Phillies pitcher.
Love Terry Mulholland.
I feel like the Vanimal or a reliever would be our best bet here.
Steve Carlton. You remember?
But we should use him for the 2,000 career strikeout square.
Yeah.
For a Twin with 2,000 career
strikeouts.
Didn't
he also play for the Sox, too? So there's combinations.
Steve, I remember Lefty. I think he pitched for Cleveland as well. God, did he bounce around? You're probably right.
Okay. All right. Vanimal or Neshek or Mulholland?
Mulholland's the oldest. Like,
but Phillies fans might remember that more.
He was pretty prominent with the Phillies in the early 90s. Neshek? He was.
Neshek or Worthy?
Neshek? Let's go Vanimal. Come on.
The Vanimal.
One time. 1% or less. Come on.
2%.
2%.
I wish you could then put names in to see, like, you know, the rest of the choices.
Looks right. Like, for what percentages they are?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way to do that.
No.
So okay, for 2,000 strikeout Twins, Steve Carlton is top 5 all time in strikeouts and made a pass through the Twins.
Okay.
Walter Johnson we've used as, because you can go back to Washington Senators history.
Bartolo.
And then Jack Morris is one. Yeah, Bartolo.
Think of the pass throughs.
Yeah, Steve Carlton's good because he doesn't come to mind as a Twin.
Let's put Steve Carlton in for the sake of time here. Come on, Steve. Less than 5%.
Lefty.
4%.
Okay. We're not going to break the record, I don't think, here, but
200 in a season now.
Blylevin.
Pablo just did it. He might be ready.
There's a bunch recently.
No.
Yeah. Barrios has done it. Liriano has done it. Liriano did it in 2010, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I covered that team.
What about, like, did Pasquale do it? He pitched too many innings
Camilo Pascual was definitely a big time strikeout guy. He was one of the big strikeout guys in the 60s.
I wouldn't use Burt because I'd probably use Burt for the Angels.
Okay. Sure. It's a good one.
For a career, at least.
What are we thinking?
Let's go. What if we went? I covered a Liriano 200. So I think it was 201 strikeouts, almost exactly.
Okay. Liriano. 8%.
Okay.
All right. Sox and Phillies, Jim Thome.
Oh, Thome, yeah.
Aaron Rowand.
Oh, Aaron Rowand.
Remember that guy?
Yeah.
I think Juan Pierre definitely played. I know he played for the Sox, and I believe he also had a stop with the Phillies.
Okay.
Gavin Floyd pitched for both these teams.
Gavin Floyd. That might be
try
it.
That.
Gavin Floyd?
Yeah, try that one.
Gavin Floyd.
I like Gavin Floyd.
By the way, Judd, hold on. Jim Cott.
Yep, he pitched for both.
He won a, didn't he?
He finished with the Phillies, didn't he? I think he finished in Philadelphia. He played from like 1958 to 83 or something ridiculous.
Gavin Floyd or Jim Cott?
Well, Floyd.
Gavin Floyd?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's use Floyd and then let's use Cott for 2000. Then.
2%. Okay.
Right?
Jim Cott.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Kitty Cott.
I'm assuming he pitched for 20 years. I'm assuming he had 2,000 strikeouts.
I hope he did. Yeah, 3%.
3%.
Oh, 3%. Look at Kitty. Look how young he is.
Okay. I'm guessing he did. Well, we already used him. I was going to say he didn't have 200 in a season. The ones recently that stand out for this is the benefit of playing early 2000s fantasy baseball.
Yep.
Javier Vazquez.
Oh, that's a good one.
And Esteban Loaiza were both 200 strikeout guys.
Deported.
In the early 2000s. I don't think Burley ever got there because he was more of a contact guy.
Yeah, he was an innings eater and a contact guy.
Jack McDowell? Did
he get to, Vazquez could be good.
That's bad at this one.
That could be a forgotten arm in that arms race there.
I used to have spreadsheets of like total numbers for seasons. And like Irvin Santana, for instance, I'm pretty sure had a 200 strikeout season with the Angels at one point.
Yeah, he definitely did. I'm trying to think.
Javier Vazquez is the one I'm the most confident.
I think we're good there. Okay. I'm trying to think of that World Series team in 05.
Chris Sales had it. He's done it.
Sales might be obvious. Very high. Javi Vazquez. Let's do Javi.
All right.
Javi Vazquez. 2%. 2%.
Yeah. Right. Look at that look on his face.
His Expos hat right there.
Yep. Oh,
love that. Love that logo.
Right, okay.
Angel Phillies.
Well, Bobby Abreu is maybe the most.
I always love the speed guys. I believe Peter Borges was an Angel. I know he was an Angel.
He was an Angel.
And I'm
both. He was both.
Pretty sure he was a Philly. Yeah.
He played for all the red teams.
He really did. He really did.
If you're good on Peter Borges, I'm
sure.
Peter Borges. Making our way through here.
Borges. 2%.
Nice. 2%?
All right. Very nice. Okay. So
Nolan Ryan for any and all of these.
Bert. Yep.
Burt Blylevin. There's a couple dudes like Frank Tanana was one of the big strikeout guys, Judd, in the 70s and 80s for the Angels and the Tigers.
But he threw his arm out and came back as a slopper. He was a slop baller with the Tigers.
What about John
Lackey?
I
bet he didn't get to 2,000.
John Lackey for sure, dude. Yep.
John Lackey.
John Lackey probably checks. Well, actually, I don't know.
He checks a lot of boxes in life.
One of our most fun nights in Fort Myers was running into drunk John Lackey at a dive bar.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That looks like a guy I could put him back to.
Oh, my God. I saw him slamming beers once. It was impressive. In fact, his whole array of how he worked the bar was impressive, but that's a story for another time.
I can give you real quick, too, an Angels 200 strikeout with confidence because of fantasy baseball again from, I don't know, the early 2000s. Jared Weaver was a 200 strikeout guy one time.
Weaver.
Didn't he? Who hit the Twins?
Weaver.
Yeah.
It was Jared Weaver, right?
It was Jared Weaver, yeah.
He spells it weird, doesn't he?
It's J-E-R-E-D is how he spells it. Jared Weaver.
Nice.
That was high. Oh, boy. Oh,
28%?
Wow. Oh, my God. 26. No, it's only 26.
26?
It's only 26. Don't sell yourself short.
Well, I wouldn't have thought that. And then I thought he was more obscure than that.
Bert. Please do Bert.
Bert.
Yeah. Bert is not an obvious Angel.
Bert.
Right, we're not gonna set our record for rarity score.
2%.
But it is a 50, and we are back
with
in the grid.
With a 26 in there, it's a 50.
Boom.
Look how nice young job, Bert boy. Is.
Nice job. All right. That's a wrap on the Score North Twin Show. We'll hit you with a random Twin of the Week on Thursday. And we'll see if the Twins sign Blake Snell here. to a team-friendly Carlos Correa-like deal. We're going to manifest this.
Yep.
Let's make this thing
Something's
happen.
Something's coming.
Feel it. See you guys.